Man, these are the dedicated few here tonight. I know that the game is on, and but I was, you know, Jeff and I were talking before we got started. I don't know if you're like, I know a little bit about Jeff and some of the people in this room, and I know that if I didn't continue to come here and treat my illness, that there would be no watching the Laker game eventually. You know what I mean? Things that I enjoyed disappear whenever I do not treat my disease. So I'm very grateful that you're here tonight, that you've chosen to be here. And, you know, hopefully it won't be a waste of your time, that God will do something tonight that will be helpful for you. And, you know, anything that's that I say that makes sense, it's because of God. I don't make a lot of sense outside of what God has. I was leaving Harbor House this afternoon, coming down here, you know, and I was in a pretty good mood, and really nice weather, you know, the wind was blowing, and so I'm listening to Bob Dylan just cruising down the freeway, and, you know, I'm looking up and go, is that an Ofri? I'm supposed to get off in San Clemente, you know, and so I turn around and get back on the freeway, and something else happens, I get distracted, I'm cruising back up, and pretty soon I'm back, I've passed my exit again. I'm going up north. It's like, what the heck is going on? So I U-turn for the third time, and I got here, you know. So I'm glad to be here. I was just kind of zoning out, you know. Do you ever do that?
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm glad to be here, and I need to be here, and you know, I need you to keep doing this thing. For those of you who are fathers, happy belated Father's Day. You know, that was a very cool day for me, being a father. My own father's deceased, and, you know, I thought about him and set a prayer and gratitude for him. I was very blessed in order, before my father died, I was able to make amends to him for basically spending his life inheritance, I mean his life's savings on drugs and alcohol. I used to steal my... did I hear music? I love ringtones. That's good. Did you pay for that ringtone? Hopefully it was a free download. My father used to collect rare coins, and he had a cutout in his bedroom in the closet under his shoes, and in the floor was a safe, and he would keep these rare coins in the safe thinking they were safe. Yeah, some of you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, I don't know about you, but when I was out there using and I ran out of drugs, boy, that craving is powerful, isn't it? You know, the next thing you know, no one's home. I'm in my parents' bedroom. I've got the shoes thrown out of the closet, and I'm down there trying to figure out the combination to this safe. Because I know in there is money. And I need money. Because I'm not working, I'm getting loaded. He had money and I didn't. And the craving was so powerful, I didn't think, well, that's my father, who's a blue-collar worker, and he works, you know, so many hours and blah, 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 and he takes his lunch every day and eats ham and cheese sandwich, and I didn't think about any of that stuff. He was a deacon in the church. My mother was a church secretary. Jeez. I didn't think about all that stuff. I'm thinking one thing, what's the combination of this damn safe? And I'm down there, you know, working and working. And I, you know what? I figured it out. Woo, bad thing. You know, it's just a matter of time until, you know, my father began to notice that some of his rare coins were missing. And, you know, and my craving was so bad, and my disease was so out of control that, I didn't know if a silver dollar was worth $400. To me, it was a damn dollar. I know none of you ever thought that way, but that was just how I was when I was in my... And, you know, I would find someone, maybe someone would give me $5 for it. I would go to the pawn shop, and they would, you know, those guys, my goodness, come on. I made them a lot of money at the pawn shop, you know what I mean? Yeah, some of you know what I mean. You know, so when I got sober, and I look back on... the fact that my mother and father both had to work a little bit past their retirement because I stole their retirement. and that my mother lived on a fixed income versus a nice, you know, posh retirement and didn't have to do anything. And, you know, I started, after I got sober and worked the steps, I started feeling bad about that. It's like, shoot, I felt better when I was getting loaded. I don't feel too good, you know, when I did that fourth step. And I started thinking about how hard my father had worked, you know, for that money, and how many years my mother had worked for the money. And I just took it, man. I could spend it, you know, a lot faster than they could make it, because they were not wealthy people. And the great thing about recovery is it allowed me to take responsibility for my behavior and be able to go back and make amends to my father and say, you know what, I was a total knucklehead. I take responsibility for the lifestyle you're currently living because I stole your life savings. I apologize. And I am going to make a living amends to you until the day you die. And I want you to know, if you die before my mother, I will always make sure she's taken care of. That's my living amends to you. That's, you know, that was what I needed to do. That's what I understood. And my father died. And before he died, I was able to go back and make amends. And he and I, for the last probably, I think, 8-9 years of his life, had a wonderful relationship. And we were cool. And, you know, the memories of my father, when I saw him, he lived outside of Dallas, and I had gone back 1 year and spent some time with him, and they liked to go riding in the country and see if they could get lost on dirt roads. Now, we lived in a little town outside of Texas. There's some weird folks back on those dirt roads. You know what I mean? And that's what my father liked to do. I remember one day, me and my mom and my dad, they were in their probably 70s then, and I'm driving, and we're on this, the blacktop ends. Because back there, there's blacktop or asphalt. Then you hit gravel. And then when the gravel ends and you hit dirt, you know you're in the country. Okay? And we're cruising down this country road. My dad says, go down that road. I'm going, are you sure? There's not really much of a road, just kind of too, you know, tired. And we went down and the road ended at this guy's house. And when we pull up there, there's this old guy standing in overalls. And he literally has, like you see, he has a pitchfork in his hand. And there was, I mean, there was no, this was, the road ended at his house, and he didn't look like, you know, he was expecting us, you know what I mean? So I didn't roll down the window and go, hey, is supper ready? I said, I looked at my mom and dad, I said, I think we need to get the hell out of here. I don't know about you, but we need to get out of here. You know, I just calmly put it in reverse, waved, you know, did the nice gesture, and backed out and got the heck out of there. And my dad absolutely loved that. That was one of his favorite stories until the day he passed away. And that was one of the good memories. When I saw my father for the last time alive, he was standing at the end of the garage. He had hugged. I told him I loved him. He told me he loved me. We hugged, and I got in a car and went to Dallas and got on a plane. You know, 6 months later, he went in the hospital sick and died. And the cool thing about it was I was able to, when he died, to get on a plane and go back. And I was sad, but I had peace of mind, you know, that My father had died, and I know that I had wrapped things up to the best of my ability. And when we were at the funeral and we were at the graveside, you know, I had no regrets. And I'm so grateful, because that's not me. I on my own, I'm the guy that's down in his bedroom floor, you know, cracking the safe, trying to get some money for drugs because the craving is real and I'm in my disease, man. I don't care who you are, what you had, whatever, I needed some money so I could get loaded. And so that's why I know I have to be here tonight. You know, and I understand that. Even though I've been sober 17 years from, you know, drugs and alcohol, I'm still in that whole process of being restored to sanity. You know what I mean? And I'm not there yet. And if you're sitting by someone that's there, you better move. You know what I mean? If you're sitting by someone who's fixed, or well, you might want to get away. It's, you know, it can be contagious. Because you and I have an illness that, thank God, there's treatment for it. And that's why I'm grateful to people like Jeff and meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and Gamblers Anonymous, all those support group meetings that understand that you and I do have an illness that has to be treated, or we're in our parents' bedroom, so to speak, cracking the code to the safe so that we can feed our destructive behavior, whatever it is. And tonight I just want to take about 15 minutes, if you can hang with me for 15 minutes, and then hopefully something will make sense to our recovery. And the goal is for you and I to be able to leave tonight being as authentic as we can possibly be. Just real quick, page 18, it says an illness of this sort, and we've come to believe it an illness, we being the members of Alcoholics Anonymous that wrote the big book at that time. An illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it's an illness. It didn't say that we came to believe that you guys are a bunch of losers, you're inadequate, you're deficient, you're used up. That's not what it says. We came to believe that it's an illness. I was at South Coast Medical Center today, up on their chemical dependency unit. I wasn't there for treatment. I just went to visit someone, just to clarify that. Probably could have used some, but... as I walked through the hospital, it was no surprise when I walked through the rooms and saw people in hospital beds that were sick. I didn't go in the hospital on the second floor where it's med-surg and go, "Oh my God, what are these people doing here?" It's a hospital. They're there because they're sick. No surprise. Nobody's in their room going, "Shame on you, you shouldn't be in the hospital." What's wrong? Just stop being sick. Get out of here. Just stop being sick. You know, some of us have heard that, you know. Just stop. Why can't you just quit? That's like going in the hospital and going, "Why don't you stop getting cancer? Come on. What's wrong with you? You know? Stop getting the flu, you moron. Take better care of yourself." An illness of this sort, and we've come to believe an illness, involves those around us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him. No one is angry or hurt. But not so with alcoholic illness. For with it, there goes annihilation of all the things worthwhile in life. That's me in the floor cracking the safe to get my dad's life savings. There goes annihilation of all the things worthwhile in my life. Because believe it or not, underneath all that behavior, I really did care about my family. I had a good family. I stole from them. I disrespected them. I lied to them. I manipulated them. I used them. But I... underneath the illness, I cared about him. Does that make sense? There goes annihilation of all the things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. The whole point of reading that page 18 is to be reminded why we're here tonight. We're here because we're treating our illness. Not because you're a bad person. Not because you're a criminal. You know, not because whatever it is. It's because we have an illness and we know in order to enjoy life, we have to treat it. Reality 101 in recovery. Would I rather be home watching the Laker game? Well, I'm not stupid. But I also know if I do go home and watch the Laker game and neglect my recovery, it probably wouldn't show up tonight. I probably could have stayed home tonight. It would have been okay. But you know what? There might be a game 7. And I might need to stay home and watch that game too. You know? Then baseball. You know, it's baseball season. And yeah, I need to go to a meeting, but you know, the Angels are playing really good. The game's on tonight. That's the way my illness affects me, you know. Tonight it probably would be okay, but in over a matter of time, boom, I'm back, you know, cracking the safe in the floor, getting money. Unfortunately now, I probably would do that to my own children who are grown adults and have their own jobs and make more than I do. So, you know, I've got to be here. And the crazy thing about it, I actually enjoy being here. I enjoy being around you. That's how sick I am. And you know why? Because it's a safe place. It's like if you're sick, it's safe to be in the hospital. Do I like being in the hospital? Hell no. But if I'm sick, that's where I want to be. I don't want you taking care of me. You know, my mom was the worst with home remedies. Oh my God. You know, it's like... take some of this with this in and tie a frog's foot around your neck and let's put a washcloth on your head and gargle with vinegar. And it's like, "Mom, stop. What the heck are you doing?" Here, take this. Jeez, if I blink too fast, you would give me something to slow it down. I learned how to self-medicate pretty early. You know, my mom was pretty good at it. First Valium I ever took from my mom, who was a church secretary, was out of the medicine cabinet in my house. I was a pretty young dude. I didn't know anything about drugs. And someone at school said, hey, you know, I heard about Valium. And back in the early 60s, Valium was kind of like, you know, you go to the doctor and get Valium for whatever. Because your TV show didn't end the way you liked it and you disappointed. Oh, here's some Valium. Hey, it's okay. I really weren't too focused on addiction. You know, there was a Valium, was just scripts for Valium were just, at least in my household. So I took one. Wow. Jeez. I never felt like this before. This is pretty cool. And I remember, it was years ago. I'm 54 years old. And I was probably maybe 9 or 10. But I remember this day, there were 12 Valium in that bottle. And why the hell I would count, I don't know. And I was smart enough even at that age to go, wait a minute. You know, I took that one, and I know my mom didn't, you know, she wasn't counting because she wouldn't think I'd do anything like that. So one's no big deal, but I knew I couldn't go back and take the whole bottle. I'm not stupid. Because she would know it's missing. You know what I mean? You understand that thought process? So I go back and just take like two at a time. You know? A nice little buzz, and mom would go, well, I thought I had more of this, but I guess not, and go on. I'll call Dr. Nicholson and get another script. Oh, here you go. So I learned to self-medicate pretty early. So I learned pretty early that any unpleasantness or any time I didn't feel good or I didn't like whatever was going on, I knew how to change that. And I got pretty good at it for a long time. You know, it ran its course, but for a while I was pretty good at feeling good all the time. I don't know about you, looking back, I just didn't like to feel bad. You know what I mean? Was I a bad guy? I had bad behavior. I definitely had destructive behavior. I just didn't like feeling bad. And I knew how to change that. I know now, I look back, and I understand now that before I ever, got completely blitzed out of my mind or drank a fifth of Wild Turkey or whatever it was that I ended up doing, that even back then, I had an illness. They didn't recognize it as an illness then. Thank God people like Bill W. and then in the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous understood there was something happening here. There was a doctor. Have you ever heard of Dr. Silkworth? Thank God that doctor understood something. That there was something going on in our brains. There was something that wasn't firing the same as like some other people out there. You know, it's kind of like somebody probably in this room has diabetes. You know, there's something's off and you have to take insulin. I'm so glad it's you and not me. I would hate to have to shoot myself with a needle every day. The only reason I never became a junkie, I hate needles. I'm a wuss. Snort, smoke, but no injection. Uh-uh. No thank you. I went into the military. That was a great idea. I don't know if you've been in the military, but when you're in boot camp, you have to get about 1,500 shots. And all at one time, like they line you up. And you, there's literally a guy on each side of your arm, and they use an air gun, not a needle. And they would tell you, when you feel that, don't move. Because what happens is that air would inject a needle into your arm real quick, and you'd get a shot for everything under the sun, and you're getting one on each side. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God. I'm going to pass out in front of my whole flight, and they're going to kick my ass all the way back to the barracks. I don't like needles. Remember going through there and getting injected, you know, simultaneously in the shoulder and going, oh, and it would rip and the blood just be running down my arm. It's like, oh my gosh. Whose brilliant idea was this to join the Air Force? Oh, it was mine. I'm sorry. It was my idea because I didn't want to go to Vietnam. Jeez. It's really interesting that, you know, you and I can come here tonight, and there is a certain amount of safety to be around people like us. As you read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, as you work the steps, when you're around the fellowship of the program, which we're experiencing here tonight, you realize that we're not bad people. We're not defective. We're not inadequate. We do have an illness. And some people in this room probably don't, you haven't realized that yet, and maybe you don't. My hat's off to you. Go try some controlled drinking. But if you are, it's okay. You're in a safe place. No one here is going to say, just stop, because we know that doesn't work. We understand that there's something, as in a diabetic or someone, there's something that's not, it's not firing right in our brain. Our thought process is a little different, and it tells me if I feel bad, I should be in the floor cracking the code to my father's safe so I can get money, so I can go buy dope, so I can feel better. Huh, that's my normal thought process. Oh, you mean yours isn't like that? To me, that was the weirdo. See, and I understand now, and it says in page 60, most people try to live by self-propulsion. Do you know what propulsion is? It's that power to whoosh, put your boat in the water, drop the motor down, turn it on, whoosh, you're gone. Start the engine on your dirt bike, whoosh, hit the throttle, boom, you're propelled, boom, you're gone. Most people, not everybody, but most people try to live by self-propulsion. And then it says after that, each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. And that was me, man. I was an actor. The only problem is I wasn't an actor in your play. By God, I was the actor and I was running the play. And life would be okay if only you would play the role I needed you to play. If you would just behave the way I wanted you to, then, you know, my play would turn out righteous. Did you ever have a problem with a girlfriend or a boyfriend? I mean, I'd hook up with somebody and go, well, you know, this will be great if you'll just act the way that, you know, in my play, if you'll act the way that I want you to, we're going to have a great relationship. Boy, I'm a slow learner. You know, I'm on my second marriage. By God's grace, I've been married to this lady 30 years, but the first one wasn't all that hot. You know what I'm saying? Because she didn't act the way I wanted her to. And the way I wanted her to act was, you need to let me smoke dope in my own house, all right? What's wrong with you, woman? This is my play. I'm the actor. You're not acting the way I want you to, so get out. I know you would never do that. That was just me at the time. I literally packed her bags for her because I was such a nice guy. And they were very heavy, and I didn't want her to hurt herself as she was leaving. And I set them, because we lived in a mobile home, had to walk down steps, and I set them out there. I said, now go, get out of here. Because she wasn't acting the way I wanted her to act. You ever been in a relationship like that? Somewhere I heard, and you know, I keep looking in the big book, I don't find it, but I hear this around recovery. When you get sober, for the first year, you might want to stay out of relationships. And I thought, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard of. And I know you probably thought that too, because it doesn't apply to me. It's for all the other knuckleheads. I can handle it. It's getting very quiet. I better move on. The reason is, and I'm going to read it here again. It says on page 73, it's almost like it said on page 60, it says, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. Now, I like the phrase where it starts out, it says, more than most people, the alcoholic. What that tells me is, you know what? You may be the one going to meetings. You may be the one working the steps. You may be the one sitting with your sponsor. You may be the one having to go to detox. You may be the one having to go to treatment. But it also tells me that more than most people, what that tells me, everybody out there, my family members, whoever it is, they live a double life also. Okay? And that's really important for you and I to grab hold of that. Now, you may be the identified patient in the family because your behavior took you over the edge. You may be the black sheep in the family. But you know what? More than most people, The alcoholic leads a double life. I was talking to a kid today in treatment. I'm the program manager of a treatment facility in Newport Beach, and there was a kid that came into treatment, real entitled, real arrogant, blah, 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 but he did complete treatment. And he's now in our transitional work program where he has a job. It's so scary, too. He actually works at a cash register at Albertsons. And, you know, that's not my side of the street. But anyway, you know, he's now working a job. And his father, who he called, he wasn't too impressed. And I first thought is, what is wrong with you, you moron? Your son is sober and he got a job. And this kid's so angry at his father. Well, come to find out as we dig a little bit deeper, the reason why is his sister 3 weeks ago walked in on his mom and dad doing cocaine. Well, hello. But they don't have a problem. They send him off to treatment. Because he'd gotten DUI, he got arrested for drugs, you know, so, you know, we got to get him out of here. He's really a problem. But dad's very successful, well known in the community, a functioning person. But the kid I was sitting with was the identified patient. If he gets well, the family's okay. I'm sorry. So it's really important that you and I understand that there's a family dynamic involved here. You're responsible for your own behavior. Okay? But just because you're the alcoholic or the addict doesn't make you less than. It doesn't make you flawed regardless of what you may hear. My understanding, and as I read the book and as I read the bigger book, the Bible, we are all created equal. And we are all created in God's image. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He's very much the actor. Yes, I'm an actor. And then it goes on to say that, and we'll bring it to a close here. This is the one, the outer world, that he presents as his stage character. What you see up here tonight is my stage character. I'm on the stage and, you know, I mean, I'm doing my deal here. But let me take you back about an hour ago. I'm sitting at Harbor House and I get the corner table so, you know, I can go over my notes and I can study and I won't be interrupted. So I'm sitting back there and it's nice and quiet. And I'm going, yeah, thank you, God. This is really nice. I drove from Newport Beach, a lot of traffic. And so I'm sitting there and it's going pretty good. And down the hall, I can see the door open. In walks this man, this woman, and these three kids. And I can hear them when they hit the door. And I'm thinking, oh, dear God, don't let them come out on the patio. Because I didn't want to be disturbed. My patio. I'm looking over my notes. Now, no, you've never thought, but that, you know, that's why I'm here. You know, and sure enough, God has a great sense of humor. Thank you, God. Here they come. I watch them all the way down. And I just grinned to myself and I said, thank God has a great sense of humor. And all the tables on the patio, where do you think they sat? Right there. Little bitty kids. And they were just being kids. They weren't there to annoy me, although that's the way I experienced it. They were there just being kids. See, but what you see up here is the stage character. I'm sitting at my table going, God, you're annoying. Get control of your kids. What the hell's wrong with you? You know what I mean? And what made it even worse, as I'm getting ready to leave now, their food comes and they join hands to pray. And all I heard was the father going, Dear Lord. And I said, yeah, Dear Lord, get me out of here. Because I'm reminded you know that the alcoholic leads a double life. That I present to you in a certain way. Inside, sometimes it's a much different story. Doesn't mean I'm bad. It doesn't mean I'm inadequate. It means I need God. Okay? That's what it means. I wasn't surprised when I went to South Coast Medical Center today when there were sick people in the hospital. Thank God for hospitals. What if they brought the ambulance, pulled up to your house and dropped the sick person off? Go here, you take care of him. Wouldn't take long and we'd start building hospitals to get them out of our house. See, and it's no surprise to God that you and I are here and that we have an illness. It's okay. God's bigger than our illness. And God takes care of those in the hospital. In fact, He even sent a message through His Son Jesus that came to live on the planet to communicate with us. He said, well, I just want you all to know I didn't come for the well. I came for the sick. Well, we just read over on page 18 that the reason I used to steal money out of my parents' bedroom, the reason I used to drink and do drugs and all this stuff is because I have an illness. And I do understand also that it's more powerful than I am and that I need God in order to be real, in order to be honest, in order to be able to be in a relationship. I had a girl yesterday, and again, I really am bringing it to a close. It's 8:20. And a girl came in my office yesterday. Never met her before. She moved out here from North Dakota. At least she had some sense. And she had been in a relationship. She'd met this guy, and 2 months later, secretly not been known to their family because, you know, they had a Midwest family, the strong values, very conservative family. She met this guy. They moved in together secretly. And 3.5 years later, he's thinking that they're getting ready to get married, and she's in my office saying, what do I do now? I don't love him. I haven't loved him for 3 years. I go, you got a problem. I got to go home to my wife. I'll see you later. No, that's not what I did. And she, you know, she wasn't sleeping. Surprise. Increased depression. Surprise. A lot of anxiety. Hello. Couldn't concentrate at work. Hello. Why? Because the actor. She was living her life as a facade. She wasn't being real. She was with this guy and he thought she loved him. And she's thinking, well, I need to break. And she even said this, I need to break up. But when she first realized this, but Christmas is in a month. Okay. Well, now, Kimberly, because we have New Year's Eve, you know. Then after that, it was the family vacation. And this has gone on for 3 years. That there's always been a reason in her mind to not get authentic and say, hey, I'm sorry, I've hurt you, I don't love you, and I'm not going to get married to you. That's hard stuff. She's not a bad person. She lived with a lot of fear of what it would do to him, what her family would say, what his family would say. Man, I can so relate to that. Living external, focused on how people around me are going to respond to me. And we wonder why we come in recovery and we're depressed and we're anxious and we're, you know. Hey, it tells us, it even says, let me read this. The outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation. I want to be the good guy. But he knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. You and I can only live a lie for so long. You know what I'm saying? Then that's when the shame kicks in. And I don't care what you do, how much money you got, what your family. Hey, you know what? Shame is much more powerful than me. We can hide it for a while. But because I'm presenting as this, I know in my heart, this ain't real. Just like this poor girl. For 3 years, she had walked around with this monster on her back. She was living a lie for 3 years. With this guy. She wanted to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, He is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. That's why it's so nice to come in a safe place. And I understand there's some people here who are not in a good spot. You're not feeling good. You don't want to hear what I got to say. You don't feel, you know what? I understand that. Because what we did out on our sprees, it's a nightmare. We're revolted deep down by some of the things that we've done and the way we've hurt people. And we get sober and all of a sudden it comes up and it's like, dang, I felt better when I was getting loaded. Coming to his senses, he's revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think that someone might have observed him. Well, my family made sure that didn't happen. My dad would, you know, pay the lawyer. We'd lock the door and shut the windows. We'll deal with this in the house. We'll deal with this in the family. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. Been there, done that. The problem is it just kept, I had to do more and more drugs, you know, more and more wild turkey. The buzz was gone, the legal problems were there, and the dang memory started coming up through that stuff. At first, I didn't remember anything. I didn't think about that stuff. I was having a great time. You know, playing foosball, going to bars, dating, you know, going, doing whatever I wanted to. The memories were gone. But after a while, you know what I'm talking about. That's why we're here. Through all that stuff, it's kept coming through. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. And that makes for more drinking. The whole point is, and here it is tonight. This is what I would like for you to leave with. Here's the solution. We have seldom told anyone the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. I've read over that so many times, it's so simple, I didn't even get it. Unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men. That's the great place about being here. You're in a room of sympathetic people. They know what you're feeling and going through as an alcoholic addict. They understand that. Dave, Jeff, all these people, we understand, we're sympathetic. No one's going to go, just stop drinking, you moron. No one here is going to do that. We're sympathetic. But it also says, unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men, we were honest with no one else. Small wonder, meaning the medical profession have a low opinion of alcoholics and their chance for recovery. We must be entirely honest with someone if we expect to live long or happily in this world. So it tells me there is a possibility that we can live happily in this world. I had a great Father's Day. My kids cooked me steak, baked potato, and bought a key lime pie from Marie Callender's. That's my favorite. And it was really my favorite because no one else liked it and I ate nearly the whole thing. And you know what? The only reason that happened is by God's grace and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I lived. Sunday was a happy day, especially after the Lakers won. My belly's sticking out. My kids are around me. I'm going, man, this is fantastic. I'm able to live a happy life. Had anyone told me that 20 years ago, 18 years ago, I would say, not me, my man. I'll probably be dead in a few years. I don't care. And screw you. But here's the simple... You and I can be honest with sympathetic people and follow advice. Let me say that again. You and I can be honest to sympathetic people and follow advice. I know you're probably wanting like something more power. It's that simple. In fact, I was reading in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 22. It says... If you want to make the right choice, seek wise counsel. Man, we have look around. We got a wealth. We're very wealthy. Be honest with a sympathetic person here. Follow their advice. Let me say it one more time. Be honest with sympathetic people. follow their advice. Jesus said, I didn't come I came for the sick. Jesus is here for me and you. He's not afraid of our illness. Be honest with a sympathetic person here. Follow their advice. Let's bow and end it with a word of prayer. I'm really glad you're here tonight. I'm glad that you're treating your illness. I'm grateful for the sympathetic people that are in this room. And if you're in a place where you're still full of fear, that's okay. Bless you. It's okay. Because it means that, one, you're aware that you're full of fear, and two, you have to be aware before you get well. No one here is going to tell you just to stop. They're going to wrap their arms around you, and they're going to love you. That's what they're going to do. What a gift. Thank you for being a part of my recovery. Thank God for my salvation, my relationship with Christ. I pray for the people that are still out there using and self-destructing. I pray for our family members that they give us space to recover and we would make our amends in time. We would love you, we would love ourselves, and we would love others. In Jesus' name, amen.